for Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. Today, Onkin MHK Rob Callister is on. Chair of the Planning Committee for the past almost 3 years. Political member for the Cabinet Office. Member of the Timber Management Committee. A member of the Select Committee on Poverty. As well as all the constituency work for Onkin. So, Faster Mike, good afternoon. Rob Callister.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Well, I think you know what we're going to start with because it's been creating all the headlines today. What is all this about, the Summerland parking? It seemed a fairly straightforward decision, but there's been all sorts of kerfuffle after it. What's happened?
Yeah, we do have to be mindful that there is still an appeals process potentially going to happen with this particular site. But basically, it was a straightforward application. The Department of Infrastructure submitted an application. The Professional Planning Office has put down a recommendation for refusal because it basically went against several key pieces of legislation and policy, including the area plan for the east. So the committee, there's seven members on the committee. I'm just one of seven members. I'm the chair. My job is to make sure the meeting flows freely. And at the end of that discussion, the committee as a whole was mindful to actually accept the officer's recommendation to refuse it. Now, I know there's been comments in the media about saying, well, we allowed a temporary car park in 2019, and that's absolutely correct. There was in January 2019, the planning committee, which I wasn't on at the time, accepted to allow a compound on that site at Summerland, and that related to the promenade works that was about to start. There was also an application in March of that year where they wanted to put in a temporary car parking for spaces. Again, that was allowed because of exceptional circumstances, and it basically gave parking spaces to those people who would have lost parking spaces on the north end of the promenade. But we didn't do, well, I say we, the planning committee at the time, didn't just allow it to happen at Summerland. We also did 25 South Quay, and we also did 40 North Quay as well. So there was various sites opened up in exceptional circumstances in order to allow people to park as the work on the promenade proceeded.
Okay, so what's the situation with that piece of land, what used to be where Summerland is? Who's allowed on there at the moment, and what purpose does it serve? Because obviously government still owns it.
Well, it does. It's up to government or for developer to bring forward a plan, a long-term plan for that particular site. And I haven't seen any in my time. And I think the thing is to remember, this is a difficult brownfield site to develop. And I personally would be very supportive of actually changing some of the legislations to look at what can be built. So we've just done one very difficult application, and that related to Lord Street. Now, that again is a site that's been empty for over 23 years, I think. But we've just put through an application which will support that particular development. But again, I think some of the criteria around brownfield sites need to be reviewed, especially around what is considered affordable housing.
Okay, you may or may not be able to answer this if there's an appeal going on, but Trevor dropped a note in yesterday and said, doesn't this show that the DOI shot themselves in the foot? They're the ones that took all the parking off the promenade. They took over 60 spaces off the promenade, and now they're saying we need more car parking. Surely they should have thought of that before they took it away on the prom.
Absolutely. There is a lot of lessons to be learned here. Two government departments should not be fighting publicly. I think it's wrong of the ex-DOI minister to come out and criticise planning when clearly the ex-minister should have known what the legislation said, what the regulation said, what the area plan said. And for me, at the heart of this is that no government department should ask another government department or board to ignore legislation or regulations. We have to act within the powers given to us by Timwald, but more importantly, we should never never act beyond the powers, because that then makes it ultra vires, which then makes it unlawful, which exposes the decision to challenge, to criticism. You know, so to me, we have to uphold the law. That is what we're there for. In 2019, there was exceptional circumstances. What might have helped is if the department had actually come to the planning committee on Monday and explained the reasons why they felt that car park was needed so urgently. They didn't. They didn't turn up. So we had the officer's report. We did our own research, and we absolutely fully agreed with the offer on that occasion.
Okay. Do you think? I mean, do you know whether or not the fairground people will be parking their stuff on Summerland?
I don't know. I've not seen any application for that. That's obviously, if that has happened in the past, which I believe it has, I think there has to be key conversations between the two government departments behind closed doors and come up with the solutions. For me, I want to see Summerland developed, but I want a long-term solution. But I think some of the things around affordable housing, around open space, some of those criteria and regulation needs to be amended. I personally think 25% of affordable housing on difficult, contaminated or difficult buildings to take down and rebuild, I think they need to be reviewed. And I would certainly be in favour of lowering affordable housing on brownfield sites, but increasing it on greenfield sites.
It's funny, when you drive by Summerland every day, and I take it you do drive by Summerland every day, it just goes into the consciousness. You almost forget that it's there. But I mean, I've stood in the middle of that site. It's huge, isn't it? I mean, it is a huge site.
There is, but I think if you take Lord Street, for example, that was a difficult site to get to a conclusion. But I think what we need to do is to actually support developers to come up with ideas, to bring things that they feel the island will need and where they are absolutely in the best interest of the island. And we should get behind them and let's start seeing the development and the investment coming back into the island. I was just saying there, as I was coming down to the station this morning, it was really nice to see a crane on North Quay. It's brilliant to see the crane on the promenade. This shows investment. This shows inward investment, shows the creation of jobs. You know, we need to have this investment because we cannot stand still. Because if not, we are going to slide back. We need to get the island looking fantastic for business, for visitors, and for people on the Isle of Man.
You mentioned before you're quite happy for members of the public to attend planning meetings. Is that right?
The planning committee meetings are open every other Monday at 10 a.m. at Murray's House. Everyone's welcome. And it depends on what's on the agenda. We didn't have too many at the meeting this Monday, but when we have something like a telegraph poll, we have 70, 80 people in there and it's standing room only. So it depends what is igniting public opinion. But on Monday, there was very few people there, which is fine. We had a couple of witnesses, we had a couple of reports. I would have classed Monday to be a very straightforward planning committee meeting, and it's so disappointing that an ex-DOI minister has come out publicly to criticise the planning committee for applying what the law says today. And that, to me, really just goes to the heart of this. You should not have two government departments at loggerheads, especially when they haven't explained the exceptional circumstances why they needed those extra spaces.
Okay, let's get to the phones then, and I think Howard's first with us today. Hi, Howard, you're live with Rob Callister.
Hi, Andy. Good afternoon, Rob.
Good afternoon, Howard.
Mr. Callister. It's just something that you probably hear the same story. It's not in my remit. I don't know anything about it, and it's somebody else's problem. But the headlines on Manx Radio's news this morning, again, the steam packet cites ongoing dredging issues, and a number of their sailings are being rescheduled. Now, I don't think you'd be old enough to remember it, but we used to be to virtually set our clocks by the steam packet. In the morning at 5 to 9, the whistle would go and they say what they're doing. They're taking the Blue Peter down, which indicated the ship was leaving port. Now, because of the harbour problems, the neglect in the harbour, lack of dredging, etc., you can't honestly say what time the steam packet are going to leave. And this is no real fault of theirs, because they are fully aware of the problems they had early on in the year where the Manxman went aground and had to lie to until sufficient water come into the harbour. And, you know, they're trying to build a schedule up and build a continuous backwards and forth sailing, where one time we only had one ship in the winter, this is, going to Liverpool. The Manxman, the Ben McCree, they're doing double that every day. And if they don't have sufficient water and sufficient draft to come into the harbour, which is provided by the DOI, the Manx government, the steam packet structure is owned by the Manx government, which is the people of the island. How on earth can a company like that, how can they operate a secure service if they're not getting the backing? There's all talk of dredging. As I say, I've said to Andy before, I was speaking to the chap that was on the Lorna 2, and he said, this is not just a simple scraping, this is major dredging. And there's been nothing done, only talk.
Yeah, thank you for that, Howard. Obviously, I don't know the fine detail of exactly what is going on at the moment. I know from last time I listened into the Manor Line, there was some dredging going on in the harbour. For me personally, the dredging should happen annually at a minimum. We've got to seriously rebuild confidence in our air and sea links. That's not just for businesses, it's for our visitors, it's all for our locals going on holiday, going away to see family. We have to rebuild confidence in our tourist sector. And I've not for the first time, I would love to be in a position, you know, if I was re-elected in September, you know, to actually turn around and actually say that we should set up a designated tourism department, because we need to put all of these elements into one basket and start to drive our visitor economy. And to me, the only way we can do that is taking out the elements of tourism that sit in DOI, take out the elements that sit in DfE, the parts that sit in education, and put them all into a dedicated department that actually will drive our visitor economy. Because I think over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to have to rely a little bit more on our tourism offering, and we have a beautiful island to sell to people. We've got to get things right. And I think at the moment, ever since the Department of Tourism was disbanded a number of years ago, everything was just put into the wrong department, in my opinion. Now is the time to put everything back, because when people book a ticket to go on the boat, they should expect that boat to go, unless it's in exceptional circumstances. I don't think dredging is a set of exceptional circumstances. And the same for our airlines as well. You know, EasyJet just cancelling a flight because they feel they can't get into the island and back again, that's not acceptable. I know EasyJet is a big animal when it comes to airlines, but the Isle of Man has to work with them to give the confidence back to people who are booking those tickets, because if not, our tourism sector is going to keep declining. Even though the numbers are good for the island, we could be doing so much more than what we're doing at the moment.
Howard?
Yeah, the tourism, well, whoever it is, the people have supposed to be looking after tourism, are wanting to push and push and push and get up to 500,000 people a year. Well, they're doing exactly the opposite. And you stay at the airport. Well, Andy knows I was there, and we used to stay behind, and the air traffic. But as it's all part of the Port Authority, and it was the same people that were actually in charge eventually of the ports, both sea and air, and this is where the cuts come in, and it just generally faded away to nothing. Yet they're two vital entrances to our little island. And as I said before, when I first come on, you set your clock in the morning by the steam packet, and they were so regular, people believed in it, and they trusted it. They might have complained, but they trusted it. And God help them now. I know they're still getting complained about. And the trust is fading, which is not good, especially as we've got a very busy period coming up in the next, 5 or 6 weeks. And we don't want too many days where they're saying, well, it's going to be delayed by 3/4 of an hour, 1/2 an hour. They have roll-on effects, and the steam packet are fighting an uphill battle against the DOI.
Okay. All right, Howard, good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, then. Take care.
Okay.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, 19 minutes past 12, and David's with us now. Hi, David. You're live with Rob Callister.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Rob.
Afternoon, David.
Can I first thank you, as my MHK, never mind the other people, population on the Isle of Man too, for bringing in and persuading, I presume, Mr. Crookall, the new minister, after the other one was sacked, and that was it. She was sacked because she wasn't performing in her duties and didn't listen to the population of the Isle of Man. And do you think maybe that's why she's having a go at you all the time now? Because you did the 20 mile an hour. Tim stopped it. He went round all the local authorities and asked them directly, do you want this to happen or not? Most of us said no. And there was a little bit of areas which we maybe wanted to had a look at, and we've still not had them done yet. And the other one was, I was going to ask you, it's a direct question to you. Two things. Are you standing? I'll leave that with you in a minute. But the other thing is, are you going to support Tim on the local government bill, Clause 5? Every local authority in the Isle of Man was against Clause 5. But there was only two politicians that were happy with it. That was the former minister who was sacked, and Hooper, who lives in Ramsey, who just wanted to score points because the CA site wasn't joining the club. I'll leave it with you.
Okay, thank you, David. The first one, in respect of political pressure, this is what the game is all about. You know, as elected members, we'll always look for opportunities to try and create a headline for ourselves. It's about getting balance. I think in respect of the Summerland site, I think that balance was wrong, because if the actual ex-minister looked at what the legislation said, took a moment to look at what the previous applications related to, I think the minister, in hindsight, would not have gone onto social media to say that she made this decision. She asked the department to submit this application. I don't think that was fair. And I'll leave it there, because we are in a political arena. We'll always look for those opportunities. You said about the 20 mile an hour. I think it's absolutely right that that was withdrawn. I'm still a big fan of the 20 mile an hour zones in the right locations, subject to full consultation with locals, with local authorities, and with businesses. And it wasn't, and as much as people say it wasn't a blanket introduction, it was, because there were so many going across our island. They have to be in the right place. They have to have the support of our communities. And I do go back to say that I fully support the living landscape, or the living landscape that was approved for Douglas Central, which focused on in and around schools and making sure our children were safe, making sure our community safe. So there are areas in Onchan which could benefit from 20 mile an hour. I think the main road through the village would actually be one of those particular locations where 20 mile an hour could be feasible, subject to the public's support. You mentioned then about the election. I'm still just trying to put things together. I would like to say I'm going to be standing, but I won't be making a final decision until the end of April. I just need to look over things from this administration. For me personally, I love being a member of the House of Keys, representing my constituency, which you were proud to serve for over 10 years, and you continue to serve the community well, you know, on the local authority level. But for me, it has been a difficult administration. Two very difficult administrations. But I've loved elements of it. But there's been part of this last administration which I've found difficult, especially around my sacking as the health minister in 2022, and then the three investigations that followed from that, and then trying to recover myself. But at the same time, not letting my constituents know the difficulties that were going on in the background with myself personally. But I have recovered. I'm back to my sort of level where I was, with confidence and trust that I was back in 2016 when I first came into the House. I love the role. I would like to say I will be standing, but I will be making a formal announcement at the end of April, once I've actually just reflected on everything, the highs, the lows, and the difficulties of this last administration, because things have got to change in the next administration. We have got to have a delivery plan. We've got to be able to engage with the public better, and we've got to rebuild their trust. And that is one step that we've got to take straight away. Next administration, or whoever comes in, they've got to bring the people of the Isle of Man with them.
Okay, and the local authority bill?
And the local authority bill, sorry, Clause 5, absolutely agree that Clause 5 should be taken out. I understand the reasons why it needed to be done. I think if you're looking at some of the this stuff, and I follow local politics closely. I think there is some concerns with a number of local authorities at the moment, clashes between clerks and elected representatives. And for me personally, I think, again, I'm sorry to pick on the DOI here, but I think what needs to happen, the DOI is the one who looks at, they are the sort of regulator of local authorities. They are the one that governs local authorities. I think there does need to be a stronger framework between local authorities and central government, not about enforcing services onto them, but actually saying that if a clerk needs advice of how to deal with a difficult elected member, what support they need to actually help them to get through it. And the same applies when you have a number of elected officials who have been elected by the people, who then find they have a difficult clerk that is actually not following their own standing orders or governance. That has to be supported as well. So I would actually say next administration, priority for the Department of Infrastructure is to bring through a robust framework that supports elected officials and the clerks. But at the same time, the department is there to give the advice instead of just giving a blanket approach and saying you need to obtain your own legal advice. That is not the oversight that a department should be doing. So a lot more needs to be done to strengthen that relationship between local authorities to do a wonderful job on the ground, and for the government to be there to support them to deliver those services.
Okay, thank you, David.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
All right, 26 minutes past 12. We're live with Rob Callister. By the way, Alison dropped a note in, Rob Callister. You are one of the most honest politicians in the government at the moment. I hope you're standing for election in September. Will you stand in middle instead, says Alison.
I'm actually proud to represent the constituency of Onchan. And that, would, to me, it's one of the most difficult decisions I had to make in 2016. You have to remember that my constituency was broken into three. So some of my constituents are in Douglas North, some are in Garth, and some are in Onchan. I did try in this administration to bring all three back together, but keep the consistency about two elected members. So Onchan would be bigger, Garth would be smaller, but Onchan would be brought back together. And what made me the decision in 2016 was the fact it had Onchan in it. So that is the reason why I stood in Onchan, because I'm proud to represent those people.
Okay, Man in Line rolls on in just a few moments.
The Granite Centre in Laxey. For complete kitchen renovations, replacement worktops, and with over 35 distinct styles and finishes, there's a Kuka instant boiling water tap for every home. Call 612287 or visit thelaxeykitchenco.im today.
One architectural design company has particular expertise in achieving planning approval for a wide variety of projects, from landmark buildings to spectacular homes. Talk to the experts at Ellis Brown and get your project off the ground. For excellence in design, search Ellis Brown.
Sometimes you need to roll out an extra bed. Millichaps have a wide range of affordable and superior single and double folder beds to suit all budgets, including luxury pocket sprung options and a fabulous choice of sofa beds in a variety of styles and sizes. Perfect for home offices and spare rooms, and all in stock for speedy delivery when guests are expected. And don't forget the pillows and bedding, with plenty of choice available at Millichaps. For fold-up beds and more, visit Millichaps today.
Manx Mobility in Onchan have it all. Daily living aids, wide-fitting shoes, rise recliners, beds and scooters, including lightweight and airline-approved models. Call in and see how our expert team can make your life easier. Manx Mobility at the top of Summer Hill.
There's monkeys and meerkats, penguins galore. You can meet with a panda, owls, lemurs and more.
The Currax Wildlife Park is open 7 days a week. So book your tickets and experiences online now at currackswildlifepark.im.
Session and Ashun
Radio Vanin. Gilg Chu, Gilg Jay, as Gilg
Thera. A Gilg, the Manx Gaelic, Chinian the mother tongue of Alian Vanin, the Isle of Man.
Avishan Rish.
You can catch up with more of Manx Radio's Manx language programmes in the weekly podcast, Avishan Rish. Say that again.
Avishan Rish.
Shene, that's the one.
Session and Ashun Radio Vanin.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Rob Callister is here, Onchan MHK, Chair of the Planning Committee. This is a note in from Paul, who just says, How can a neighbour of mine apply to build a four-bedroom bungalow in his back garden despite numerous objections from myself and other residents, yet it's approved by a planning inspector based in England who hasn't visited the site, by his own admission? It feels scandalous and makes a mockery of anybody objecting. It appears to be decided by somebody looking at only paperwork. Any appeal by myself will cost £485 and would still be assessed by an independent officer, possibly the same person, based in England. What's the point of our planning office if applications are outsourced? Do you recognise that?
I do recognise it, but I will be very careful to talk about a specific planning application just in case it's still what they class as live and Paul could submit an appeal. And I would actually encourage him to put an appeal in if he feels that strongly about it. I don't know this particular case.
Hypothetically.
Yeah, so hypothetically, I would encourage Paul to put an appeal in, and it's not the same person. So what actually happens is, and I've always said that every MHK who's elected should do an appeal, because what that appeal basically means is you go through the original decision, you then have another independent in planning inspector, and that's normally someone off Ireland. When I was in the department, I actually had another inspector from Ireland who would do it, and in that conversation you'd have the AG's chamber in there as well, and you'd have other officers in there, and you would go through the application and you'd come to a conclusion, and you either supported the independent inspector's reasons and decision, or you'd overturn them. So it's very complex, it's very difficult. But we have to remember that planning on the Isle of Man, we have a number of pieces of legislation and regulation. So we have the Town and Country Planning Act 1999, you know, the amended act in 2019. We also have the Building Control Act. We have the Area Plan for the East. So I would go back and look at those documents. We also have the Town and Country Permitted Development Orders 2025. Now, again, I don't know that particular case, but for me, the legislation on the Isle of Man and the regulations are very tough. So if the officer's recommendation was down for approval and the planning committee decided not to go with his approval and refused that application, we'd have to have very strong grounds to do it. You can't just say we don't like it and turn it down. You have to give legitimate reasons, which are then tested during the appeal. But my advice to Paul is, without going into specifics, if anybody feels not happy with a decision made by the planning committee or a planning officer, and again, we have to remember we get somewhere between 1,200 and 1,400 applications a year, less than 20% come to the planning committee. So if Paul's not happy with it, put the appeal in. If anyone else is unhappy with a decision, put it in and then test the application process.
Planning can get very vexed, can't it? It can raise temperatures and tempers as well. So how do you negotiate your way? I mean, the old question of does anybody have the right to a view or the right to light? How does that work?
Well, a lot of them, we had one recently where we would look at it and officers made a recommendation to either refuse or to accept. And we would go and do our own research. And I'm incredibly grateful to the planning committee because, as I say, I'm just the political chair, but there are six lay members on that. People from all walks of life, anyone could apply. We've just got a new member just joined us recently, and it's up to them to understand what the application is asking for. And then if we're not 100% convinced by the information given to us, we'll do a thing called a site visit. So we did one on this week where we looked at one in Ballasalla. We went and had a look to see how the landscape, how close properties were to the application. And to me, that happens quite regularly. We'll go out and look at something, we'll get a feel of the land, and then assess that against the officer's recommendation. And if you look at the last couple of meetings, we have on occasion overturned the officer's recommendation because we felt that there wasn't the right balance. So we do go against the officer's recommendations quite regularly, but it has to be for good reasons and it has to be within the curtilage of what the law says and what the regulations say.
OK, let's go to the lines again. And Tina's with us. Hi, Tina. You're live with Rob Callister.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. My question's regarding Summerland site. You may or may not know that for many years I've been progressing or trying to progress a memorial on the Summerland site. The first one is the Manx Development Corporation. Where do they now stand with regards to the Summerland site?
Okay, Tina, thank you so much for your question. And to be honest, I'm absolutely fully aware of your I wouldn't say petition, but your concerns, and I personally support them. I think if any development happens on Summerland site, then I do think we do have to factor in some form of memorial on that site. Even though a lot of people argue that we've got one just down the road, I think there has to be something within that development in the future, and that has to incorporate maybe a terrace garden memorial or something has to be within that structure. That's a personal view. In respect of the Manx corporate development, it's the same as any developer. I'm not sure anyone's putting an application in at the moment. And if they do, then we will only consider it from a planning point of view is when that application is received and full details are given to the planning committee to consider the merits of that application. So as of today, I'm not aware of any application in the background. There may be, but it hasn't been presented to the committee so far. But from a constituency point of view, from an island point of view, as an MHK who grew up on the island, I think whoever comes to develop that site has to factor in the excellent work that you and your colleagues are doing about getting some form of a memorial on that site to incorporate what happened back in the 70s.
Gina?
Yeah, that's very good. That's great to have support. It means a lot. I've had meetings with Manx Development Corporation, and what they relay to me is that they have been given the site, to find development and finance for that site. So are they still in the running? Are they still involved to that extent?
So did you say you'd had a conversation with the Manx Development Corporation?
Yeah, I've had a couple of meetings with them. Not of late, but as a stakeholder of the site, they asked me would I come along and give me my views, etc., as to what I think should happen for the site.
Yeah.
And my understanding was that they would be given, which they have been given, that site to develop and to find development for. So I don't quite understand what it's a bit of, it seems a grey area as to who is actually responsible for that site and its any development which comes up in the future.
Right. I think, again, Manx Corporate Development was incorporated to look at every single Brownsfield site. And I think they looked at Lord Street. They obviously didn't think it was viable. They will be looking at Summerland site. They'll be looking at every other Brownfield site to see if the government can get these sites developed and if they can make a go of it. But private developers could also come up with better ideas. And sometimes I would be more in favour of a private developer coming up and putting on an idea. But as I say, being sensitive to that particular site, if the Manx Corporate Development came up with an application at some point in the future, then I think they have to be even more mindful of what happened in the past.
Okay, all right, Tina, thanks for calling today. Sue in Balaf said, I think I heard Mr. Callister say that affordable housing should be developed on greenfield sites and not brownfield. Then he said it's good to see cranes working on the island becoming attractive. The island may not be attractive if there are many empty derelict brownfield sites. What does Mr. Callister suggest should be done with brownfield sites to make the island attractive?
Okay, so what I actually said there, and I do thank the caller there for the message, what I'm saying is brownfield sites are incredibly difficult to develop.
Right.
Normally they have a building on it that needs to be taken down and to be rebuilt. Sometimes the site is contaminated. These have an amazing amount of additional cost attached. If you go into a greenfield site, you pretty much just scrape the ground, put the foundations in, and if you're already building next to an existing infrastructure, the costs are really low compared to a brownfield site. What I'm actually saying is I know from my 3 years on the planning committee as an MHK, I think the regulations and rules around affordable housing offering on a brownfield site should be reviewed to make it more enticing. So we just take Tina's call there in relation to Summerland, to make it more enticing for developers to come in and to be able to make a profit and to make the site work and to put something there for the betterment of the island. Now, what I'm saying is at the moment, every single if there's a development of 8, then 25% of those units have to be affordable. What I'm actually saying is it's easier to build in the countryside, and we've got a beautiful island. We've got to be careful how we carve up our island. So for me, I think if developers are going in the countryside in the future, then I think that affordable housing element should be 35%. That's a personal view. And on a brownfield site, I think maybe that affordable housing or the commuted sum for open space and for affordable housing should maybe be reduced down to 10% in order to encourage developers is to get our brownfield sites developed instead of carving up the countryside.
OK, and Taylor, on this subject, Taylor obviously lives in Onchan and just said, is there anywhere left in Onchan to actually build now, or is Onchan just completely hemmed in?
No, there is small places in Onchan. Molly's Kitchen is one. There is a number of small sites. I would love to see each and every single one of those developed in Onchan, because they're just small little pockets.
That Harbour Road site's been flattened since they knocked down Molly's Kitchen. That's that 10 years ago?
I reached out to the owner of that site in the last administration. I want to see first-time buyers' homes on that. I think it doesn't need normal housing. It just needs first-time buyers, social housing or something. It needs something on there. I would encourage that developer to come forward and let's get that developed for the betterment of Onchan. Now, obviously, in the area plan for the east, there is the potential of building a massive estate at the top of Birch Hill. And if we are to do that site, and you've got to remember the trigger is in the area plan for the east, it has to be 89,000 plus population of the Isle of Man, and that site could be triggered. However, there is a curveball to that, is where the planning committee objected to two developments that were in the area plan for the east, and they were both overturned in the appeal. So there could be applications submitted earlier than that, and I'll be ready as an MHK to fight for that, against that, as a constituency MHK, not as the chair of planning. I'd probably recuse myself of that. But if that estate at the top of Birch Hill was to be built in the future, then we have to seriously look at the infrastructure. We have to seriously look at the connectivity, because Onchan at the moment could not accept an additional 500 cars coming through Birch Hill. They have to look at how this estate would exit and enter. We then have to look at the traffic flow through Onchan. Now, we've got to remember, Onchan is a unique area on the island. When the mountain is closed, every piece of traffic comes through the north, through Laxey, through Onchan and into Douglas. So if we are going to build a new estate in Onchan, which could have up to 250 properties in it, we have to seriously look at how the traffic flows and where this traffic comes into and exits.
Okay, that's your answer, Taylor. And G on 313 said, older housing estates were built with sufficient car parking for the time. And obviously there are increased pressures on parking due to a greater volume of resident cars. But why are there no planning restrictions on multiple occupancy homes, adding six cars to a street or a single resident address by having 6 metre vans, a lorry, three other vehicles and what have you?
I agree. I think parking is one of the most problematic problems with planning, because we've just done one on Monday where there was a multi-occupancy one where there's going to be 24 rooms let out.
This is the one off the prom.
Yeah. So again, that could be subject to an appeal. So I've got to be a little careful, but I can only give you what I said in the public domain on Monday. To me, I was the one that voted against it because I was deeply concerned about multi-occupancies. I just think I would have preferred four or five good quality apartments in there. However, I also acknowledge there is a demand for this type of property, you know, and the island needs to embrace that. But parking, especially in my constituency, parking is a big issue, because most of these estates, especially in Onchan, which was built on the back of each other from the 50s, it was built with the idea that people would have one car. Nowadays, most families have two cars, probably three, and it does create problems within constituencies, especially in my constituency in Onchan.
Affordable housing is no longer affordable, said 404, when they end up in the hands of buy-to-let investors. Is it time to take these properties out of the buy-to-let team, or to stop people having multiple houses? I mean, this is the people who own dozens and dozens of houses, not the person who owns one or two and uses them as an income.
Absolutely agree. But we have to remember, some of these people who are buying multiple properties on the Isle of Man are landlords. They are the ones who put them out to rent. We'll always need a rental market on the Isle of Man. We have changed legislation when I was in the Department for Enterprise, which made it better for first-time buyers on the Isle of Man. We reduced some of the costs. We made it more expensive for people buying second properties. But I absolutely agree. I'm hoping that this government will do it before the end of this administration. But to me, we were 3-4 years behind. One of the first things this administration should have been done in this administration was to look at affordable housing, look to buy to let, look at our social housing. You know, I'm really grateful that the current DOI minister is now looking at the financial threshold. I've argued in this administration on 3 or 4 occasions, if not more, that the financial thresholds to access social housing was set too low, and the financial threshold thresholds for those being assessed after a five-year term was set too low. And just to put that into context, Andy, if you and I were a couple living in a social house and we had our financials checked and we're both earning the minimum wage, we would expect to see our rent increase by 30%, even though we're on the minimum wage. That was totally unacceptable, and that is because the financial threshold was set too low by the Department of Infrastructure. And I'm really grateful to the current minister who's bringing forward legislation, hopefully after consultation, to increase that amount to about 50,000. And what needs to happen is to make sure that that figure increases by inflation. And we also need to make sure that figure is included in when we're assessing people who live in social housing. Too many of my constituents have found that they're on the minimum wage together and found that they found their rent increasing by 30%. And that's on top of the annual increase that the department announces every April.
Back to the phones now. Julian's on now. Hi, Julian. You're live with Rob Callister.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Rob.
Afternoon, Julian.
Hiya. Interested. You mentioned Birch Hill earlier. As a representative for Onchan constituents, can you give your opinion on the Morvannin offshore wind farm, especially considering elevated residential areas like Birch Hill, Howe Road, King Edward Road, Harbour Road, Hillbury Road, Majestic Apartments, especially considering that these turbines are going to be around four times higher than the headlands to the northeast. So the residents are going to clearly see at least some of the blades, and then you've got all the attendant things like flicker at sunrise, and you've got the idea about property values. There's going to be an awful lot of people, I think, are going to be able to see these because they're so much higher.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I know some people are saying that MHK's should not speak on the Ørsted wind farm application, but for me, I think this is going to become a significant election issue, especially for those in Ramsey, in Garth, in Onchan, and possibly in Douglas. You're absolutely right. These turbines are going to be somewhere between 12 and 6 nautical miles off the island's east coast, broadly between Macclehead and Douglas Head, but it could generate a capacity of around 1.4 gigawatts of energy for the island. But if we can step back a little bit, and I'll just go back to the point you said about the height. These are going to be around 330 metres high from sea level to blade, but then these are approximately going to be 100 metres taller than anything else in the British Isles, and that includes the Dogger Bank offshore turbines and also the ones that are in Scotland. So that is a concern, but we have to be mindful of this, that this agreement for the Morvannin area was entered into in 2015, which enabled detailed investigations and feasibility studies offshore. Now, what is the concern is I haven't seen that details, and I don't think the public have seen that details. So it's really hard to make a balanced view. What we do know from what the report tells us, there is a potential income from this site of around £2 billion for the Isle of Man over a 35-year period. Plus, there is, they potentially could make between 10 and 15 million billion pounds from this site. So to me, it's really important that the public get all of this information. And we also have to remember, this decision will not be made in the next administration. It's likely to be made over the next two administrations. And with this wind farm coming online in around 2032, 33. So there's a lot of things to happen between now and then, a lot of discussions. But for me personally, the final decision should be made by the people of the Isle of Man based on what is beneficial to the Isle of Man. And one of the things I'm absolutely sure has to happen, we have to have a direct cable from that wind farm, if it goes ahead, onto the Isle of Man to give power for around 100,000 properties on the Isle of Man, and for the Isle of Man people to see a significant reduction in their electricity bills, which would generate business on the Isle of Man and give people confidence over a 35-year period. But here today, I can't say I'm either for or against because I just don't have sufficient information.
Julian?
Yeah, you mentioned the 2 billion. I think that translates into 50 million a year, which is what, an eighth of Manx Care? I mean, they're over at 412 million. So this is kind of like offering trinkets, isn't it? 2 billion over that period of time is almost an insult, especially when you think how much they have to pay in seabed leases of around 150 million a year to the Crown Estate if they weren't in our territorial water just across on the other side.
That figure is
and also, as you say, yeah, but you know, nobody's giving any details. So who would, I mean, nobody would buy a car on this basis. Okay. We're not going to tell you how much it is, etc.
OK, well, that's an important point, and that is the fact that even our elected representatives haven't seen the detail.
Some people have seen it, but not myself. Obviously, some people in Treasury would have seen it. But if you go back to that £2 billion over 35 years, it works out to £57.1 million pounds per year. Yeah. And that may be income that the island needs. But for me, given the fact that this project could potentially make some that the company between 10 billion and 15 billion over that 35 years, I think there's room for negotiation. I think I would happily take the £2 billion if we could get a cable onto the Isle of Man and significantly reduce electricity cables, you know, bills for the island, for domestic customers, for businesses. But again, that decision has to be taken by the Isle of Man based on all the information, all of the benefits to the island and all the negatives.
Okay.
And it's a tough decision, but it's one that's going to have to be made over the next two administrations.
Texter 109 said, I take my hat off to Mr. Callister. It's the first time I've heard an MHK recognise the severity of the issues that the island is up against, and I'm further heartened by the fact he suggests there needs to be some sort of broad alliance or consensus to face the very serious issues that the island's going to face in the next 5 years. The independent political system we currently have, I think, has failed us. We desperately need consensus and a broad move towards a better economic and social environment.
Yeah, we basically need, say, for example, whoever comes in September, whoever's elected come the next election, that has to be a united team that's going to galvanise the political members, agree and listen to other opinions, but make the right decisions for the island. We need to bring the people with us. The public need to understand the challenges that we faced over the last 10 years. So I was chair of Manx Utilities when we went through the energy crisis, and I know the pain we had to go through and the money we had to spend to protect businesses and domestic customers, and we were far better than what happened in the UK. And the same for our business. We need to get behind developers, we need to get behind businesses, especially small businesses. There is a balance about how do we get this balance right, because obviously businesses need to trade, but we've got people asking for higher wages because of the cost of living. So we need to look at all of these problems about how do we lower some of the costs that are hitting our families at the moment. And some of that is utilities. And maybe it's something we have to look at. How do we lower electricity bills, not just for domestic customers, but also to support businesses that they need those at lower costs?
OK, 9 minutes before one on Man Alive with Rob Callister, MHK.
Join Kell Developments on Saturday and Sunday at their exclusive Oatlands Road Andreas show home opening. Discover high spec modern new builds, quality finishes, energy efficient features, and speak with the developers. Show home open 10 to 2 every Saturday and Sunday, or by appointment.
The exclusive Karcher store is open with thousands of products, accessories, and parts in stock. For Karcher sales and service, Hersham Electrical, Shipyard Industrial Estate, Ramsey.
Manx Memorials in Ballasalla will guide you in creating beautiful lasting memorials across the island. From a wide range of granite and marble headstones, custom inscriptions, expert renovations and pet memorials, adding care and compassion in every detail, we offer families peace of mind for years with perpetual grave care. We're there when you need them most. Call 843 861 or email matthew@manxmemorials.co.uk.
For a trustworthy removal and storage solution, contact Dave's Removals and Storage. Offering man and van removals, clearances and long or short-term storage with pick-up and drop-off service. Call 258 766 or find Dave's Removals and Storage on Facebook.
For 100 years, Manx Petroleum has been part of island life. From fueling journeys to heating homes and businesses, we've been there, quietly, reliably, locally. A century of keeping the island moving. A century of keeping it warm. A century built on trust. And today, as ever, we're powering everyday life with care, experience, and premium fuels. Manx Petroleum, always here for you.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Rob Callister, MHK, with us until 1 o'clock today. Could you explain, this is 514 said, some planning officers work in the UK. Haven't got enough government employees working on the Isle of Man. Why do we have people in the UK?
Because planning regulation and law is incredibly complex, and we have professional planning officers, and at the moment we don't have enough of them. But what we do is we have some officers that help us. They are based in the UK. They'll come over and they'll look at these applications in the merits and then to do it. But yeah, we should have planning officers based in the Isle of Man, but unfortunately it's just at the moment we can't get the officers we need.
Harriet, and a message in from Harriet saying, at the last election, not one candidate mentioned a sister dying, the bishop's vote going, or 20 miles per hour across the Isle of Man. And yet that was right throughout this last administration. How do we know that somebody's not going to bring something along in the next administration and take up all the time then?
Yeah, well, it hasn't taken up the time. There is an element put aside for private members' bills. Everything that Harriet just mentioned there is private members. We do have to respect that. This is a democratic system. Anyone can bring any piece of legislation they like to the House to consider. It is up to the House to give a member leave and then for the member to bring forward the legislation for consideration, but it could be stopped at any time. But unfortunately, this administration has been dogged by a lot of real difficult pieces of legislation where it's just become a bit of fighting between members to try and get something through. But I think there's also been some very important work in respect of legislation in this administration.
But at the same time, as those three private members, you just say that's perfectly legitimate, that's part of the system. At the same time, we don't know how much Liverpool landing stage is going to cost. We don't have enough air traffic controllers, and the boats don't arrive always.
And you know something? And this goes back to my very first opening remarks about rebuilding the trust and confidence. The next administration needs to communicate better with the people of the Isle of Man. If you take something like Summerland, where we started with, it's not an easy decision to make. But somebody like myself or another elected member should be able to come onto your programme and explain to the public how that decision was reached. The public may accept it or not accept it, but at least the information's out in the public domain to explain how we reached that conclusion.
Okay. Once again, for anybody who wants to pitch up at the planning committee meetings, they are, when are they, Mondays?
They're every other Monday, and the Murray House, ground floor. Come in, you'll be made most welcome, but obviously you can't contribute unless you've actually submitted an application. But you can certainly look at how an application and how that decision's been made in the full glare of the public.
Okay, and your constituency surgery meetings, when are they? Where are they?
Believe it or not, I've got one this Saturday, and it'll be 10 a.m. till 11:30 a.m. at the Onken Community Club, and everybody is more than welcome to attend. And to be fair, I haven't had a surgery yet when nobody hasn't turned up.
Okay. And I can tell you, Rob also puts the kettle on while he's there. Nobody goes without a cup of tea.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks for being with us today. When will you tell everybody whether you're standing again?
As I say, it was a difficult administration. I loved it, most of it, but there was a dark period in 22-23. I just want to reflect on that, but I will be making a formal announcement before the end of April.
OK, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Andy.
Good to talk to you. Rob Callis there, MHK. We're open line tomorrow and Friday. On Monday, Claire Christian, MHK, will be in with Tim O'Neill. Claire's the DHSC Minister, as well as Douglas South MHK, and the Chief Officer, Tim O'Neill. So it's DHSC on Monday, open line tomorrow on Friday. Thanks to Chris on the phones. Have a great day. W-I-N-T.